Welcome back to the Movie Babble Podcast. This week you've got myself, Colin, and I'm joined by Nick and Brennan as we break down the opening weekend of The Secret Life of Pets 2, as well as X-Men Dark Phoenix. And as always, you can check us out online at moviebabblereviews.com. So, breaking down the top five for this week, we've got The Secret Life of Pets 2 opening up at $47.1 million, followed by Dark Phoenix at $33 million in the number two spot. Aladdin opening up, or not opening, but continuing on at number three with $24.5 million. Godzilla in at number four with $15.54 million. And Rocket Man rounding out the domestic top five with $14 million. So Secret Life of Pets opened up, you know, well enough compared to everything else it's going against, but this is ridiculously below the original. The original Secret Life of Pets had one of the largest, if not the largest, original idea openings in a long time. And I don't know, this is quite a dip. 47 is far below. I think Secret Life of Pets 1 was hovering around the $100 million mark, and I'll look up the exact numbers here in a little bit. But yeah, this is not the opening they would have hoped for.
Yeah, so this is the second largest opening in the history of movies. So with it's over 4,500 theaters, and it's just below what Endgame opened in. So they were really pushing this movie hard over at Illumination. They really got like nothing out of it. Like, yeah, like original movie made over 100. This movie made under 50. Budget's about the same. But I've always wondered, like, I just don't think they marketed this movie very well. They released all of, like, these character, like, trailers and stuff like that. But, like, I had no idea what this movie was about leading up to its release this week. I just knew that there was a Secret Life of Pets 2 coming at some point. So this just feels like Universal was like, oh yeah, we're making this sequel, so just everyone's going to see it. And they just didn't really put a lot of thought into how they wanted to market that. So I don't know. It's just, I mean, it's going to make its money. It's already made over its budget, I believe, overseas. But it's not, this movie is going to do, it's just going to pale severely in comparison to the original.
Yeah, for sure. I think the first one was a surprise hit. I mean, pets, animated animals talking. I think that's always a go-to for families in terms of just taking your family out to the movies, young kids. And I think that the first one is just kind of unique in that way. It's The Secret Life of Pets. I don't think that The Secret Life of Pets 2 was necessary. I don't think it's a sequel that anyone really begged for, but it's a sequel that they had to make, considering the first film made $875 million worldwide, which is insane. And Universal over there with their Illumination and animated films, they really push these movies hard in terms of theater count. You're definitely right there. Despicable Me 3 was in over 4,500 theaters. Pretty much every recent Universal animated film is in well over 4,000 theaters. So they really do push these films hard. It's not the opening they would have wanted. I think it's way under expectations. But they do a good job at keeping their budgets at a respectable number. Pretty much every single one of the films of the last decade from this studio keeps the budget around 70 to 80 million. So they know what they're doing. And I think that they should be okay in the long run, but it's definitely a disappointment.
Yeah. Here's a question to either of you guys. Did either of you guys like the first Secret Life of Pets movie, or did you guys even see it? Or
I saw it. I honestly couldn't tell you much more about it other than I know there's a scene somewhere in there where Kevin Hart fights a crocodile or rides a crocodile or something like that. But yeah, this movie made no impression on me when I saw the original.
I'll be honest. I didn't see the original.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. And I think that's like, I just feel like the movie, like, it made a crap ton of money, but I don't think, I haven't heard like anybody like say how much they like the first movie. It just seemed like it just made a crazy amount of money because it has that really funny hook of, like, yeah, like you mentioned before, The Secret Life of Pets, and it made for a really funny trailer with just animated animals just doing wacky things. And I don't think it was kind of like the first, or not the first, but the live action remake of Alice in Wonderland, where, I mean, that made money because of 3D and things like that, but it was kind of the same deal where it was a massive movie that just made no impression at all. And the second movie comes out, and the second Alice in Wonderland was Alice in the Looking Glass, I think, whatever that was called, just made, just tanked hard, and no one went to go see that. I think we're kind of seeing something similar here. Just everyone just was like, oh yeah, there's, they're pets, they're doing wacky things. I don't know, maybe Aladdin took some of the bite out of this too, because that's obviously geared towards families and whatnot. So it's just kind of disappointing. I mean, I didn't see the first movie, so I felt like I couldn't really see the second one until that happens. So I just didn't really gauge any type of interest in this movie, which is it's kind of weird.
I know it's on Netflix now, the original, the first one, which came out or dropped on Netflix about a week or two ago. So I'm going to probably check that out, then head to theaters and see this one. So I mean, yeah, I think it sounds kind of like the Avatar of animated movies. the first film, that is.
Yeah,
it's, man, unless, you know, the first film had Louis C.K., so unless there's just a huge following
that
decided not to show up when he got replaced, I'd say it's just one of those movies that, yeah, did some work, but doesn't really have much foundation to stand on.
I think they should have marketed Harrison Ford a lot harder. I think that actually is a character in the film that intrigues me. I think it's perfect casting for him, playing kind of like an old dog who's not interested in much. I think that's something that he could suit well, and that could probably draw in older crowds, as maybe not draw in older crowds coming alone, but make older people want to take their children or grandchildren more. But I don't know. It's just a weird kind of situation here.
Yeah. So you're saying Harrison Ford plays himself in this movie?
Yeah, exactly. Like. That's what I'm saying.
Actually, now that you bring it up, when I went to go see Aladdin, they had a trailer for this, and it was the first trailer that I had seen that wasn't the little character vignettes. And yeah, the dog sounds like Harrison Ford, but also doesn't sound like him. Like, sounds like someone's trying to do a Harrison Ford impression at the same time. So my friend and I were watching Aladdin. I was like, is that Harrison Ford? And he was like, no, that can't be it. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure that's him. And I just don't feel like they really, he didn't get really top billing or that much attention. I think in the marketing, they kind of focused a lot on Kevin Hart, which, you know, he is pretty popular, but kids don't really care for that kind of thing. So
yeah, I wonder if they had Harrison Ford for like 2 hours, like he just like finished smoking a bowl or whatever, and they're like, all right, come in and like do 2 hours and like you can leave. And he left after doing like 5 lines and like, shit, we didn't get all our lines, bring a voice actor, we'll try to do Harrison Ford's voice.
Meanwhile Harrison Ford's watching Aladdin thinking, is that me in the trailers?
Yeah, it's it could be like Jeff Goldblum recorded his Isle of Dog lines over Skype because they couldn't get him into the studio when they needed him.
Yeah, it probably was. He was busy fixing his helicopter or whatever. I don't know. Harrison Ford just doing Harrison Ford things. I don't know.
So yeah, that kind of sums up The Secret Life of Pets 2. So moving on to another dud, we've got X-Men Dark Phoenix. This is its third release date. They actually released it this time. So it's been delayed nearly a year. It was supposed to come out last November. It's now coming out in June after it had already been pushed back to this February. But it debuted at $33 million, which is the lowest domestically of the X-Men franchise. The closest to it would be The Wolverine in 2013, which opened to about 54, which for a solo movie that nobody really asked for after X-Men Origins, it's just kind of sad that Dark Phoenix would open so far below it. You know, this has been kind of marketed as the send-off to the X-Men. You know, Disney has made it pretty clear that they're not going to continue with Fox's X-Men, and so we kind of have what was supposed to be their triumphant last note. But it is beyond struggling right now.
Yeah, this movie is tanking harder than anything I can imagine for quite some time. This movie, $200 million budget, which is kind of crazy, because when you watch this movie, there's just nothing in it that would suggest that it had a massive budget. Like, if you watch this movie and you know nothing about the behind the scenes troubles on it, you would probably say it's probably like a $70 million budget, maybe 80, 90, just to pay all the big actors that are in it. But yeah, this movie went over, had serious reshoots multiple times, and apparently one was just to completely shoot the third act over again because it mirrored Captain Marvel like almost identically, which makes sense if you see the like the first two acts of the movie, and they kind of have similar threads moving through them. But yeah, this is I feel like this was just like a lame duck from the beginning. When you hear, I mean, this is Simon Kinberg's directorial debut, and he's been involved in all these X-Men movies before and all that as a producer and a writer. But when you hear that like a producer, like a longtime producer is coming in to direct the movie, that's not a great sign for one of these things. It just felt like everyone just kind of was there and no one was really interested. And they're like, all right, like we'll get a tax break if we make this movie and that'll be that. And maybe we can make our money back. And then things got worse. And then it just kept snowballing. And then Fox got purchased. And then all this stuff happened. So I just feel like this was just kind of a means to an end for Fox and X-Men. They just kind of had to get it out. But yeah, this is not great. $33 million, $200 million budget. This is not good.
Yeah, I'm going to throw my two cents in here. I think that the film opened up to 140 million worldwide. I don't think that's gonna be enough, considering I feel like they marketed this thing pretty heavily. I don't know if it's gonna lose a ton of money, but it definitely needed more domestically. It needed at least a $50 million opening. It needed. I don't even know if this movie is gonna make 100 million by the end of its run. It might, but I don't know if it will make 100 million domestically. But it started at 140 million worldwide this weekend. I don't think that's quite enough. Usually movies that don't really do that well, but still break even, open up worldwide to pretty close to their budget. And 140 million is still significantly behind the $200 million budget. So it's kind of rough. I don't know what happened here. I think it's a mix of several different things. But the lead up was really a mess for this movie. And I think that was the thing that hurt it the most. And it was just awful timing. The timing of this release killed it, with the merger and everything else around that. I think it's just kind of a sad goodbye, because it's a franchise that really opened so many doors for comic book films. So it's kind of a sad goodbye. It's bittersweet, but there you go.
Yeah, we can, I guess, talk about the movie a little bit itself too, but I don't see this movie doing well at all in the future weeks, because, I mean, we'll get into it a little bit here, but this is one of the most deathly serious movies I've seen, especially from comic book movies, just like forever. Like, this makes Batman v Superman look like Ace Ventura. Like, it's just, there's just no levity. Like, there's maybe like one or two throwaway lines from Evan Peters as Quicksilver. And after that, it's just, everyone is just sad and mopey and kind of half acting and just waiting to get their craft service and paycheck and leave for the day. And and the cinema score is a B-, which is really not good as far as legs are concerned. I don't really know what I don't really see. If this movie gets, it would say, you would have to say it makes it's $200 million budget. You would hope that it makes 500 million worldwide. That's probably its break even point, somewhere around there. And I don't see it getting anywhere close to there, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. And I mean, this movie has been a mess ever since they announced it, really. So, you know, everyone kind of thought that this part of the X-Men franchise was done after X-Men Apocalypse. Jennifer Lawrence has been pretty vocal about not wanting to return for years. and so Fassbender and McAvoy and even Nicholas Holt have all gotten pretty famous by now and have more options, especially with Holt and Jennifer Lawrence. They take a lot of time being painted blue before they go film every day. And so that was already kind of a mess. So it was a big surprise when they announced it. And then you had everything with Bryan Singer coming out and he left the franchise, and then Ken Berg kind of came in, and it really reminds me a lot of X3 or of X-Men The Last Stand, just production-wise, like they brought in this producer who'd been with the franchise for a while and just completely derailed one of the X-Men's biggest stories. And I was really hoping that they'd kind of update it or do a different take on the Dark Phoenix. And it's like, if you take the Dark Phoenix parts of the movie from The Last Stand and from Dark Phoenix, it's pretty much like the same arc, and they don't really change anything to it. It's just a different actress. And yeah, they changed some of the side characters, but then they sideline a lot of people. Like Quicksilver sort of gets injured and then never shows up again. completely abandoning like the whole father-son plot thread they've been building for two movies. And then, yeah, Mystique, like in the trailer, she gets killed. She gets impaled by a wooden board, which I just thought was hilarious when that scene happened. Because literally in like the first X-Men movie, she gets stabbed by Wolverine and then it's fine. And in this one, yeah, she gets killed by a wooden board. And then Magneto doesn't show up until about halfway through the second act. And to me, the third act just really came out of nowhere. Like they get captured at some point in the second act. And then all of a sudden it's like the climax. And I was like, oh, is there not like a story here? Or
so it sounds like the reshoots really did mess things up a little bit.
Yeah, this movie is literally every act is a different movie. And they're like, shit, we got to get from this place to this place. You're captured now. No reason. These are just henchmen that'll come in, take you. All right, we're on a train now. All right, there's a fight. And the movie's over. Cool. All right. Thanks, X-Men. See you later. This movie is not good at all. It's just aggressively bland and all kinds, and then just shoddily made, just because it's just there's just nothing to it, and a lot of the actors are just like I said earlier, they're just there for their paycheck. And Jessica Chastain, Jennifer Lawrence, and Nicholas Holt could not look more uninterested throughout this entire movie. And it's just tough. It's when you have the highest highs like Logan or First Class or just any of those, just and then you have something like this comes in, it's kind of a bummer, and it really puts a weird end on all of this, because it's like you said before, like this is probably the most important superhero franchise ever, maybe, because it really set the really set the mark for these team up movies and showing that these comic book movies can be taken seriously and that they're profitable. And I mean, without these being successful, I mean, we may not get the MCU. It's just tough to kind of just see such a limp movie after all of that, after all of those building blocks. So it's really tough.
Yeah, and there's a lot of weird close-ups in this movie. I don't know if you had that takeaway, but like all of the emotional scenes, it's almost like a Dutch angle close-up that they use on it. And I just... I couldn't take it seriously.
It's because Simon Kinberg, the action in this movie's not bad, but he's not a director. I'd say stick to producing. He's produced a lot of good movies over the years, like The Martian and things like that. And he's very, very, very involved in Fox things. But there's that one scene where, I guess we're full on spoilers at this point. Spoilers, where we're the Dark Phoenix, Sophie Turner, and Magneto are like trying to both hold a helicopter, and like the camera just like holds on them for like 5 years, and it's like it does literally nothing. And Michael Fassbender is really, really trying to sell this scene, and it just looks so goofy, the way it's like framed and the way the lighting is, and it's just tough. And all the actors look really tired. I don't know if you noticed that either. Do they just like the makeup crews, like they all have dark circles and they all just look miserable and they're just sad to be there. And there's just no energy at all to this thing. It's just tough. Like I just wanted to fall asleep and go to and forget about this movie. It's brutal. Sorry, Dark Phoenix.
My favorite line was, so, you know, early in the film that shows like the president has a phone to the X-Men. And, you know, they're like celebrated as superheroes, which I have no idea where that came from. And then it's like the emotional climax. I think I can't remember if it's for Beast or if it's for Professor X. But one of the like henchmen that captures them is like, my daughter used to celebrate you. And it's like, that's what this entire, like, that's what that entire character's arc is supposed to hinge on. And it's just this really robotic henchman just delivering that line, and then the train blows up. And
yeah, it's this movie is rough. I really just feel bad. It's just, I feel like everyone gets out of it mostly unscathed. Like, I don't look at these actors differently, but it's just kind of just a really bad mark on everyone's careers involved. It's just not good, like, at all. Like, James McAvoy and Fassbender are really, really trying. And actually, like, there's one scene in the beginning between young Jean Grey and James McAvoy that was fairly touching. Actually, the first 20 minutes of this movie aren't the worst when they're in space. And I was like, all right, I'm kind of on board. And then it just turns into a different movie like 10 different times. And they just like drop things over and over again. And yeah, nothing's resolved. It's just a facsimile of a movie. Like, there's just nothing to it at all.
I couldn't take the opening scene with young Jean seriously, because it reminded me too much of the opening scene from Shazam. And it literally plays out the same way. And I was
there's another thing I noticed in this movie. I think this just kind of sums up the movie in general. You've seen this in the trailers. It's the car crash at the beginning where Jean Grey just kind of gets her powers go wonky and she crashes the car. And the car's just like laying there in the middle of the road. And then I'm sitting there thinking, what happened to the other car? Like, it just disappeared. Like, there's just that one car. Like, both cars were destroyed and the other one just is nowhere to be found. And it's just like that level of detail just isn't there at all in this movie. It's just trying to kind of get at you at the heartstrings. It has that faux Hans Zimmer score that just plays throughout the entire movie that never stops, and it's just, here, you should be feeling this way, and the movie might not be telling you to feel this way, but by gosh, you're gonna feel it because of this score. And it's just tough. This is just kind of a mess. It's just an institutional failure of a movie. And I just don't see this movie making any type of money. I just don't think, like, I wanted to take a nap after this movie was done. Like, I saw in the middle of the day and I was ready to go out and see friends. And then I was like, after this, I was like, I just kind of want to put a blanket over me and just kind of do nothing. Like, it's just rough. It's tough to see.
And it is sad because it is, you know, the end of the X-Men franchise and you know, everything you touched on. But it's also like they did try to cram a lot of really cool X-Men stuff in here. It's just, you just kind of see like a glimpse of something like Magneto's country. And then they brought in Dazzler and gave her
Dazzler
30-second long fireworks scene, which I thought was odd. Also, they're like 30 years old and still having parties in the woods. But yeah, lots of interesting decisions with this movie that they just try to cram a whole bunch in, and they don't really do any of it well.
Yeah. All right, so quickly, what's everyone's favorite X-Men movie? Because I feel like we should still cheer this franchise for while it's done, and I feel like that's going to kind of be lost in how just bad this movie is. So do you guys have a favorite?
Mine's a tie. I waffle back and forth on either X2 or Days of Future Past. I don't think X2 has aged as well, just in the face of the MCU and everything. But I think I remember watching that as a kid, and like when I watch it now, it's just as cool and as good of a movie as I remember it being.
Yeah, that's definitely a good pick. It has the right, it hits all the right notes, and it's pretty good. But I would go with your second one there, Days of Future Past.
Yeah, my favorite's Logan. I can't wait for all the Nolanites to yell at me, but I just think, from my perspective, this is my favorite superhero movie. I think it's far superior to anything else I've seen in that respect. So Dark Knight heads, get at me on Twitter. I think that movie's perfect, and I cried multiple times seeing it. There's a few of these X-Men movies where they really let the director and like the creative team just do what the character needed, like with Deadpool, or I think First Class is kind of that way too. And it is weird having that kind of dichotomy between these such high highs and these are like all these movies mentioned here are probably like the best, like in the top 10, 15 superhero movies ever made, probably. And then you have Dark Phoenix and Apocalypse and Origins. And it's just, it is, this franchise is so janky and wonky. It's weird, but its legacy will live on. And I think that's something to note in all of this.
For sure.
Yeah. We'll talk about it in film studies classes 50 years from now.
I hope so. I teach that class. That'd be fun.
So, unless anybody has anything else on Dark Phoenix, we can go ahead and move into Aladdin, which as of this week actually has outgrossed the original, which is kind of makes me sad, but also like I guess Disney's doing their thing still. I enjoyed this movie, and it's still going decently strong. You know, it's third week and it's still in the number three spot.
Yeah, I don't have much. I don't have much to really say about it now after a few weeks, but I will just continue to reiterate that this is a movie that we had no idea where it was going to land in terms of box office numbers, and it's kind of being that choice family movie that's just going to hang around. And I don't know how much longer it has. You have Father's Day coming up. I mean, Toy Story 4 is on the way. It's looking like it's outlasting Secret Life of Pets 2. I mean, obviously it didn't open as or didn't gross as much, but that's a given since it's the opening weekend of Secret Life of Pets 2. But Aladdin is having just small drops each week. Again, respectable drops. They're making a lot of money, over 600 million worldwide. I guessed 500 to 600 after its first weekend numbers. Now maybe this movie can even trek all the way to 700.
Yeah, people just like member berries sometimes, you know. It's just like this movie is, it's kind of, if you really wanted to see Aladdin again, and this movie kind of does it for you. And I've talked to a lot of people who feel that way about this movie, where they just saw Aladdin again and they enjoyed it and they made him happy and filled their hearts with joy and love. I don't know. So that's just kind of one of those things. That's kind of Disney's bread and butter with a lot of these movies, just kind of safe and delightful, and there's songs and everyone will just make your heart skip a beat. And it's just one of those things. And I kind of see it doing really well next week as well. I mean, you have Men in Black International, which we talk about later, but we have that and Shaft and The Dead Don't Die, the Jim Jarmusch movie. I don't really see anything in the same kind of genre or demographic as Aladdin. So I think leading up to Toy Story, it's just going to do really well again next week. So Disney, they inherited Dark Phoenix and all the shit that goes with it, but they also have Aladdin just cranking out money every week. So that's kind of where we're at with Disney. They have the high highs and that overmask a lot of the lows. So yeah, this movie doing well.
Yeah, Aladdin is a thing.
It's a thing.
So we'll move on to number four with quite a steep drop this week. And honestly, I take a little bit of a sick pleasure in watching this movie fail. Is Godzilla King of the Monsters dropped down about 67% in its second week to 15.5 million domestic. Last weekend, it was around 49. This movie's legs have quickly come out from under it.
I'm going to talk about it a little bit here. I think that the film, I think for this franchise, the typical is $550 million. Look around there. Kong Skull Island and the 2014 Godzilla both made around, with I believe Skull Island making a bit more, but both kind of in the mid 500 range. This movie will not do that, but I think this movie is still going to pass 400 million. And why? Because of the foreign market. I look at how this movie did this weekend overseas, and it did quite well. Usually foreign markets are very, very, very front loaded, very top heavy, and then they drop off quickly. It looks like this movie has decent legs overseas. I mean, here it's really dropping off quite fast. But I have a film to compare this to just in a second. But this weekend it did add another 100 million to its overall total. 15.5 of that, as we said, from the domestic domestic numbers, but 85 million of that is from overseas, meaning it just saw a 35% overseas drop from this weekend to last. So I think that's a very respectable number for them overseas, but it's really going to be these North American numbers that are hurting them. If they were just doing even slightly better here in North America, this movie would definitely be passing 500 million. What I'm going to compare it to is Alita. Overseas, this film looks a lot like Alita. Alita went on to gross a little over 300 million overseas. I see this movie probably reaching that. They're already over 200 million overseas, about 215. I see the movie making over 300 million overseas because a lot of the nations that it opened up big in had kind of similar numbers to Alita in terms of that opening weekend as well. It's also kind of tracking a little bit better here domestically than Alita did. So I think Godzilla will surpass 400 million. It'll probably just break even. I mean, who knows what the marketing is? It was undisclosed, which isn't a great sign. But it's, I'm trying to give it all the passes I can. there's my little math right there. I think the overseas numbers are really what's going to carry this thing. Domestically, it's definitely fallen flat on its face.
Yeah, it's a 67.5% drop, which is just really, really bad for a blockbuster like this. And I can see why. I caught up on this movie this week. I didn't get a chance to see it last week. But this movie I left it. I had no impression. And that's just kind of what a lot of people felt, I feel like. I don't see anyone really talking about this movie. There's no really buzz about it. It's not really, you kind of want like that schlocky fun with this kind of movie, and all of the humor in this movie is just kind of misplaced or just kind of under the surface. And it's just a hard sell, which is weird for a Godzilla monster movie. And maybe this kind of changes the calculus moving forward. I mean, Godzilla vs. Kong is happening. Like, they're already in pre-production for that movie. It's coming out next year. Like, whatever happens with this movie, like, that movie's happening. So that's kind of, that discussion is mute. But like after that, I wonder if they had plans after that movie that might, those plans might change with the success of this movie. So I don't know.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, I know Godzilla vs. Kong is done. They finished shooting it. They finished shooting 2 months ago, Godzilla v. Kong for next year. But they did announce today that they are considering moving the release date from March 2020 to later in the year. And changing some things around in the movie. So it kind of sounds like classic Warner Bros. Right here. So it's done shooting, so it's definitely going to come out. I don't know what they're going to do after that. I think that's going to be one that's going to be the make or break for them. I mean, they might want to save face and just end the franchise after that. I know that they wanted to do more kind of smaller monster spin-off movies, but I don't think any monsters can stack up to Godzilla and King Kong. You can't make another movie about, say, Mothra. You can't do that. You can't make a spinoff about Mothra unless it costs nothing to make, because that's definitely not going to happen. This film had a pretty much identical drop to the 2014 one. 2014 Godzilla had a 66.8% drop, but I think the biggest difference was the 2014 Godzilla had so much hype because it was going to be Hollywood's kind of rewriting the wrongs of 1998. We're finally going to get a full CGI Godzilla, like a legit Godzilla. And I think that was kind of the hype going into 2014. That's why it did open up to $93 million in its first weekend, but it also suffered the pretty much same 67% drop. So I think that's kind of what happens with a Godzilla movie. I don't know. No matter how it does, maybe we'll just see 67% drops every weekend.
Yeah, I just don't think does anyone like these Monster Universe movies? I mean, I really like, I think the 2014 Godzilla does a lot of interesting things, but even then, like, I can acknowledge that, like, a lot of people just have a lot of issues with it, and characters are really bland, and there's not enough monster action in it. And then, I mean, Kong Skull Island, I didn't really like that movie, and I think it's fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, but it also didn't blow the doors off. And then you have this as well. Like, I wonder if that kind of like track record just kind of
I know that both Godzilla 2014 and Kong Skull Island, I believe, are the identical Rotten Tomatoes scores. I think that critics kind of liked the 2014 Godzilla, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the vibe. I enjoyed the tone. I enjoyed the direction. I thought it set up something good, but a lot of diehard Godzilla fans didn't like it for the reasons that they like King of the Monsters, because King of the Monsters is just all out craziness, monsters everywhere. But King of the Monsters also loses a lot of the tone of the 2014 film. I think the characters, in my opinion, are even worse in this movie. I don't know. Personally, I think the characters are even worse in this film. So they got worse. They listened to the fans and they threw monsters everywhere and made this a crazy movie, but they got rid of, they made things that were bad about the first film even worse. And Kong Skull Island, I know a lot of people enjoy that movie. Just kind of as just a fun monster movie. I'm a huge fan of 1933 King Kong and Peter Jackson's 05. Peter Jackson's 2005 remake is one of my favorite movies. So whenever I saw Kong Skull Island, I remember rejecting it initially because it's not the classic story and that's me. But then I'm like, you know what? It fits the MonsterVerse and I enjoyed it for what it was. But I don't think they've had a knockout movie yet. I don't think they've had a great movie yet. I think they've just had kind of movies that are either meh or have good moments but aren't all, they don't all come together yet.
Yeah, I thought Skull Island was a lot of fun. Like, it's a good Jurassic Park knockoff. There's some really cool stuff, like with Tom Hiddleston when he's like fighting the skull things with a sword in the middle of a poison gas cloud. There's just a lot of weird stuff in it that I just like. It's a fun movie to watch. You're not going to get anything from it, but you'll enjoy 2 hours of it. Whereas, you know, I talked about King of the Monsters last week. I really loathe this movie. I was so tired of the human drama. Like, I was there for the monster fights, but the other 2 hours of the movie, I was just completely clocked out.
Oh yeah, you give zero fucks about anything going on in this movie. Like whatever Millie Bobby Brown is doing in this movie, like I just do not care. I'm really hoping someday someone has the gall to just make like a silent movie just with monsters. There's no human characters, just monsters just destroying each other for 2 hours, and I feel like that would just be like the greatest thing ever, but probably won't ever get made because studio notes happen. But yeah, no, what can you do?
Yeah, every 15 minutes Bradley Whitford will pop in and say something funny.
Yeah,
and then I'd like wake up a little bit and then just go back to sleep until Godzilla started doing stuff again. And I feel like a problem with the MonsterVerse going forward would be that they kind of played all their big monsters in this movie. Like Rodan and King Ghidorah and Mothra are all like pretty big Godzilla figures. You could have like Mecha Godzilla, but I don't really know where else they would go with this franchise after Kong versus Godzilla. So there is that, just considering the future of the MonsterVerse. And so, yeah, I think that kind of wraps up the number four spot. And then at number five is Rocket Man in its second week with 14 million. Only had about a 45.6% drop. So compared to Godzilla and Ma, the holdovers from last week, this one seems to have the best legs for what it is. And it's more than even just domestically, it's about made up its budget. It's actually crossed its budget domestically, plus it's doing about another 51 million foreign. So this movie's been quite a little hit. Not pulling Bohemian Rhapsody numbers, but still pulling pretty good numbers for an R-rated biopic.
Yeah, it's doing all right. And I'm kind of happy to see it because I didn't get a chance to talk around the pod last week, but I enjoyed this movie for what it was. It's probably the best version of like what a cliche biopic can be, but it's really solid and Darren Edgerton's really good. And this is kind of good for Paramount. We've talked about this before, where just Paramount has just been struggling for a couple of years now, and they just need every hit they can get. And I think the move is that they want to push this movie hard for when award season comes around. So I think they're hoping that the drops get lower and lower, kind of what The Greatest Showman did a few years ago, where it kind of dropped not great the first 2 weeks, and all of a sudden it just kind of hit like crazy. So I feel like they're kind of hoping that same kind of buzz, but that was also released during Christmas time, so that's a little bit of a bad comparison there. But they're really hoping for this movie to do well, and they want to push Taron Egerton for best actor at some point. And it's doing okay. Like, it's made over 100 million worldwide, a 40 million budget, so it's doing fine. It's going to make them a nice little pretty penny. So it's just kind of, we'll just kind of see what the legs are from the next few weeks to see if this movie really has any pull later in the year.
Yeah, it's
No, I'll just say one little thing about it. I mean, I think that this movie was never going to be a massive success. I believe I said this last week because it is R-rated. But for what it is, it's going to make a lot of money. And I think this 45.6% drop a second weekend is not bad. I could see it dropping even lower as the weeks continue. I think that's obviously what they hope for, but that's something that I think a lot of people were guessing would happen this week, a really small drop. I think this is a bigger drop than I expected it to have, but still, it's a good drop. It's something that they're definitely seeing as a positive, so we'll see how it does in the weeks to come. But this movie, if it does kind of get those legs that you guys were talking about, it will make a lot of money, and it'll kind of be on people's minds for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I think it'll resurface pretty well along when award season comes around. I mean, it's kind of early to be looking at what will be award season movies, but I think Rocketman and at least Taron Egerton will have a pretty strong presence there.
Yeah, I think so. Apparently, from what I've heard, it sounds like the best actor race is going to be incredibly strong this year with a couple movies coming out. I mean, we have the Mr. Rogers biopic with Tom Hanks coming out this year, which is probably like the most perfect casting ever. It's just, so, I mean, there's a bunch of other movies coming out. It sounds like the race would be really strong there, but Paramount's definitely going to make a push for this movie. So, and I think whatever success it has come award season is what it does in the next few weeks, because it's going to have to become more of a breakaway hit in order for it to really become a mainstay.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And so moving on to some other premieres. And actually, before we move on to that, does anybody know what's up with The Dog's Purpose? It had went up 22% despite closing in 1,000 of the theaters it was in.
I think it's A Dog's Journey, right? There's too many of these dogs.
Yeah, Dog's Journey.
Right, yeah. It jumped 22% despite it jumped 22%. 22% despite seeing 70% of its theaters leave 70% of theaters it was in. So, I mean, that's a movie that people are starting to realize is out, and they're going to see it.
People like dogs, I guess. I don't know. I have no idea.
It was National Best Friend Day this past weekend, so maybe the best friend is a dog.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's good. That's good reasoning. I'm going with it.
All right, so moving on to some premieres this week, we have Late Night, the Minnie Kaling, Emma Thompson comedy, opening up, or at least premiering in 4 theaters. You know, it's not going to pull just major numbers yet, but this has been a pretty talked about movie so far. I know Nick, you had a little bit more to say on that.
Yeah, and this is one of the big ticket items at Sundance that I didn't get into. It was really talked about like all over the festival, and Amazon Studios came in and bought it for $14 million, which was, I think, the second highest purchase price at the festival behind Blinded by the Light, which comes out in August, which was a $15 million purchase, I believe. This seemed like it was a crowd favorite. All the fans really, really enjoyed this movie, and critics are giving it pretty decent reviews as well. It's fresh and rotten, the Rotten Tomatoes scale, and it's Emma Thompson, Minnie Kaling. There's some comedy, late night talk show host. It made 62,000 per screen, which is really, really great when you're opening in LA and New York on 4 screens. So this is definitely one. This one goes wide this week, so it's definitely one to look out for, because it might be a little sleeper, a little cute hit in the summer and in the weeks to come.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited to see it when it opens up with a bigger release this weekend. And I mean, it looks pretty funny. I trust Mindy Kaling. You know, I watched The Office, so I trust in her writing.
For sure.
But yeah, and then The Last Black Man in San Francisco is kind of in a similar situation. Premiered in 7 theaters this week and opened to similar numbers. But again, kind of at this point, numbers don't really matter because you're not really... You're open for press with a premiere not open for earning money yet.
Yeah, and this was another movie that I have a personal vendetta against for not seeing at Sundance. I was in a line to see this movie and in the press line an hour and a half before it started, and I did not get in because every critic was dying to see this movie, and people left the screenings crying and in tears, and people were saying it was one of the more gut-wrenching and like just like thought-provoking movies they'd seen in quite a long time. So that's some kind of endorsement there. This movie opened in New York, LA, and San Fran this week, which is why you see the 7 theaters instead of the usual 4 for this kind of opening. People love it. It's the newest A24 movie. Kind of by the title, you can tell it deals with gentrification in San Fran and that kind of the changing landscape of demographics in the area. So this movie is probably going to – it's definitely one to look out for. I think it's another – it's one of A24's premier movies this year. And it's caught my attention. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. And actually, I don't think it's going wide next week, but there's definitely a major expansion coming. So I think everyone listening should probably be on the lookout for this one. This could be the movie that film Twitter goes nuts about.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this for a while, and it's one of my more anticipated films of the year. So I'm definitely gonna look out for it when it expands. I don't know, maybe they'll expand more and more as the weekends go on until they kind of peak. That could be something that happens with this type of movie, or they might just see them jump into a couple thousand theaters across North America. But regardless, I think this is a pretty exciting and pretty highly anticipated film for me.
Yeah, I saw people weeping talking about this movie at Sundance, which is just kind of crazy to think about. And these are all stodgy film critics like me who are really cynical just about everything. And like all the, like the poll quotes about this movie, just like you're gonna like there's one in the trailer where it's like, you know, this movie's special in the first 5 minutes and things like that. So they're blowing a lot of smoke out this movie's ass. So we'll see if it's good. I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, and so that kind of wraps up all the new releases for this week. Next week, probably what I'm most excited about is not having to see the Men in Black trailer before every single movie. I've probably seen that trailer 10, 15 times in the past month. Don't get me wrong, I like Men in Black, but I'm so tired of seeing that.
I am right with you, Colin. I've seen that thing way too many times. It's just like, all right, you've marketed your movie. I get your point.
It's not even a good trailer.
It really isn't. I don't know. I'm sure
the music, I don't think the music fits. The music fits for the first little bit. Good song choice, but I don't know. It's just not pieced together that well.
Do we think this movie's going to do well?
I don't think so.
I don't know. It's got Chris Hemsworth to kind of pull it along, which he's kind of the Will Smith of you know, the 2010s.
I
would imagine he's going to do for this what Will Smith did for the original, but it's also a movie kind of like Dark Phoenix where I don't really see why it's here, right? Like they ended the franchise pretty well with Men in Black 3. They didn't really leave just a ton of room open for, you know, more. I mean, obviously it's a pretty big world with aliens and all that, but they just didn't leave a ton of room that you're like, yeah, we need to see a sequel to that. So I'm really interested to see how this one turns out.
I personally think it's bombing. That's just my call.
I mean, I think I saw it has a $110 million budget, so that's not too good. That's kind of, I would have hoped they would have kept it around like a 70, 80. It's kind of amazing what one good movie will do. We're still trying to crack that Men in Black formula after all these years.
One thing I also would kind of point out for this film this weekend, something to definitely look out for, is that as the franchise went on, it got worse and worse in terms of domestic totals, but it got better and better in terms of overseas totals. So the third film is the lowest grossing domestic total of the franchise, but the third film is also the highest grossing overseas total of the franchise. So I think this movie, you don't have Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones. You're kind of taking a gamble. You're starting something fresh. So we'll see if the foreign markets catch on to that. If they enjoy it, we might see a film that breaks even, makes its money. If they don't, we might see this thing crash and burn.
I wonder if that's why they're going international this time. it's just like the cynical play, like, fuck it, we made more movie worldwide, let's just go international with this thing.
Which, it's like when Transformers just started randomly going to China in all the movies. even the Avengers did that with Age of Ultron. They have like that whole South Korea like sequence that sort of fits but not really. Yeah. I'd like to see this movie succeed, just because honestly, I think I've seen the first Men in Black more than I've seen any other movie. Like, that's always one that we've had. I guarantee I have it on VHS, DVD, and Blu-ray in my house right now. Like, it's one that I've just always had. Like, it's always been there. And so I've always been a fan of it. I'd love to see it, like, continue on into a new era, but I don't really know if it's going to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I got no idea. I don't see this movie doing very well, but I don't know. I could be wrong.
Other than Men in Black, next week we'll also see the Shaft quasi-reboot, as well as The Dead Don't Die. I know I'm pretty excited for that one. I don't really care about Shaft, but, you know.
I'm going to see Shaft because I want to see every movie Samuel L. Jackson's in this year, because it's a lot. We started with Glass, Captain Marvel, Endgame for about 2 seconds, but Endgame counts. Now Shaft, and then after that we're going to see the next Spider-Man movie. He's in that too. Seems like he plays kind of a significant role. So, I mean, he's making a ton of movies like he always does. So, I don't know, I'm making it a bucket list to see every Samuel L. Jackson movie this year, so I'm probably going to check out Shaft.
Yeah, so this is the third Shaft movie that's called Shaft.
Yep.
There was the TV show for a little bit after the first, like, couple Shaft movies were made, and literally, like, there's, like, two movies that are, like, Shaft, like, something. Like, I don't know what they're called because I haven't seen them, but it's, like, there's, like, three movies named Shaft, and everything's called Shaft, and they're, like, all kind of reboots of each other, but not really, and then they're kind of, like, extending the story because Richard Roundtree is back again. Like, I don't know. They're just, this is like total, like, a cynical IP play for me personally, but whatever. We have another Shaft movie.
I am also pretty excited for The Dead Don't Die, though. That's one that I kind of was like, interesting. And then more and more of the promotional videos are coming out. And I don't know. I think it could be a really fun time.
Yeah, that's one.
So, this week. Just kind of a funny note. When Samuel L. Jackson played Shaft the first time was the year that Unbreakable came out. And now that he's playing it again is the year that Glass comes out.
That's a good note.
There you go.
So, yeah, I'm sure that everyone listening just had their life changed by that. But you know.
I know I did.
Yeah, I see it completely differently. I'm just open to everything new now. It's crazy.
So, yeah, this week was kind of dismal performance wise. I have a feeling next week might be somewhere along those lines as well. We'll just kind of see when we get there. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Movie Babble Podcast. Again, you can check us out online at moviebabblereviews.com, and check back next week as we talk about the opening weekend of Men in Black International, as well as The Dead Don't Die and Shaft.